And welcome back to Speak Up Las Cruces with Daisy Maldonado and Peter Goodman and Chris Erickson. And you folks, if you can manage to dial the phone, we're reachable at 526-5825, and we'll be talking about some interesting issues, but feel free to question us, disagree with us, or bring up a new topic that relates to the economy. Chris, who's a frequent guest and a friend, is an MSU professor, and got several things we want to ask you about, including the tariffs. Anything in particular that you would say to people by way of an opening statement about current state of the economy?
Well, one of probably the most interesting thing right now is the fact they closed the El Paso airport, and that's going to have a major in the expectations.
No, it ain't.
What?
It got reopened. Yeah.
Already? We discussed this already.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Early this morning, I read the same stuff you read, and there was security reasons, no explanation beyond that given.
Yeah.
Closed, reopened the 21st.
Yep.
They don't care about the economy.
Right, exactly.
In El Paso, or maybe they want to hurt it.
Right, exactly.
You know, El Paso doesn't like some people in Washington.
Yep.
But my good friend Carlos texted me as we started to turn on the microphones that they've backed off that. And somebody in the White House said why it happened.
Yeah.
Had you heard that?
No, I had not heard that.
And it's that Mexican cartel drones invaded or crossed into the airspace.
Oh, wow. Well, there you go.
But feel free to say what you were going to say.
Hard-hitting news, fresh off the presses. I'm very glad to hear that because I tell you, it would have been very disruptive for our economy.
No kidding.
Had they proceeded with that. But it is very troublesome when these sorts of things happen without any explanation or especially for somewhere that closing it down for 10 days, it would have been very disruptive. But I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad we got an explanation. And actually, if drones were invading the airspace over El Paso, that's probably a pretty valid reason for shutting down the airport. Yep. So I will stop there. And I'll go on and say that since you want to talk about the border, and of course the border is the most important driver of the economy in Doñana County. Not so much, I mean, it is important in Las Cruces, but of course it's mainly in the southern part of the county, that the tariffs have had a negative impact on that area. There have been a couple of companies that were going to locate in southern New Mexico that I understand have either scaled back dramatically or have decided not to locate to southern New Mexico, southern Doñana County, because of the tariffs. And there are other companies that have had had financial difficulty. Now, of course, you always have to say, was it the tariffs? Was it but for the tariffs, or were there a number of factors that led to it, of which the tariff was maybe the nail in the coffin, or maybe the tariff is the excuse for other bad business decisions?
Well, can you give folks a 1 minute or less crash course? How do tariffs generally affect the economy, and who pays them?
Well,
mostly.
The answer is the way they affect the economy is by increasing prices that are paid by consumers, which reduces demand and thereby reduces economic activity. Who pays the tariff? Well, of course, we all pay the tariff in the sense that there's less economic activity. It depresses the economy. There's less economic activity. And that decline in economic activity is referred to by economists as dead weight loss. And the reason why we call it dead weight loss is because it benefits nobody. Now, if you talk about the actual tariff itself, who's paying for it? That's a complicated question, and it varies depending on market conditions and from product to product. But generally, there's a split. Some of it comes out of corporate profits. Some of it comes out of the pockets of consumers.
Okay.
So you can't say that there's one rule of who pays it or even who pays most of it. It's highly variable across products.
Am I right? You know, I'm no economist, but it seems as if tariffs were big deal, you know, popular high school debate question in the 1880s.
Yeah.
And we, you know. Yeah.
That's a good way to put it. Do you remember
more
that?
Than 100.
I remember that. I remember that as my debate topic in high school.
I was not in high school in the 1880s, but I was, for fiction, trying to create a debate topic. Yeah. And there were several, including, you know, should women have the franchise?
Yeah.
But, you know, tariffs were a big deal in 1880 and in 1920. I mean, you know, the president, Harding and Coolidge and those guys.
Yeah.
But since then, they've been sort of, except in special circumstances where another country does something unfair, so we'll throw a tariff on there.
Yeah.
They've been kind of a dead letter, haven't they?
Yeah, well, if you look at it historically, tariffs were an important issue prior to the Civil War. Tariffs were an important issue again in the as you said, in the 1880s. McKinley ran first time he ran for office.
Right.
He ran on a platform of high tariffs, but when he came into office, he actually had sort of a conversion. And it was the first president to really argue for reducing tariffs for economic reasons. Mm-hmm. And so he became an anti-tariff president ultimately. The other one is Smoot-Hawley Act in the 1930s, which is a major increase in tariffs that many, many economists, and by many economists I mean me.
I don't think you had an opinion in the.
I had an opinion
in the 1930s.
I was a history. I didn't have an opinion at the time, but I've met many economists today, including me, believe was a major contributor to the Great Depression and spreading the Great Depression from the United States to the rest of the world. Tariffs are, you know, even if you go back, if you really want to get into the history of it, you can go back to David Ricardo, who was a very early economist. He was he's often considered the second great economist, the first great economist after Adam Smith. Who argued against the corn laws in England in the 1810s. And economists hate tariffs. We think that they are a bad idea. And the reason why we think they're a bad idea is because they are.
I know Daisy wants to ask a question. I just got to say, McKinley, who, by the way, I think was the last president who had actually fought in the Civil War.
Yes, I think that's right.
But McKinley learned in office. And isn't that a wonderful thought?
Isn't that a wonderful
president?
Thought?
There was a time when a president could actually learn.
Yeah.
But go ahead, Daisy.
Yeah, no, and I was just wondering if you could go a step further and talk about it's a bad idea, right? And so out of the White House, the message is, or a piece of the message, right? If part of it is like punishing. It's just purely like it seems like we want to hate other countries, but also that somehow this is going to drive growth and new industry here in the United States.
Well,
so I'm just curious what your thoughts on
that. It can help. Tariffs can help individual companies and industries, and it will if it's applied in a targeted methodological way and not across the board in an arbitrary way and then going on and off in targeted in a methodological way and targeted way. Can be used to support industries that the United States views as strategically important or politically important. It can do that, but at the cost to consumers and at the cost to particularly like if you take something like steel, if you put a tariff on steel, well, that will benefit the steel industry in the United States. It will increase steel jobs in the United States. Mm-hmm. It will help the steel industry survive and prosper, but at the cost to all the companies that buy steel. And so that's
all the consumers
and all the consumers that buy
cars or
all the consumers who buy the products that steel are in. And so it can do that. And you could argue that there are like for example, you could argue that maybe chips, microchips.
Right, I was going to ask that. Right.
Right. Yeah, you could argue microchips are a strategically important resource that we should maybe do something to ensure that we have in domestic production and we're not reliant on potentially unreliable foreign actors for our chip supply. And we can use tariffs to do that. So yeah, that's a purpose, but you got to always remember it's at a cost. Yeah. It's at a cost.
I see.
Yeah.
Well, another topic. We're seeing a lot of news about somebody in Washington wanting to replace the head of the Federal Reserve Bank. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing a lot of people saying, oh, that's crazy. You know, the White House shouldn't control the Federal Reserve Bank. But most of us don't have any accounts in the Federal Reserve Bank. And most of us are walking down the street not even too clear what it does and why it matters. So why does an independent
Fed matter? Since you got on the topic of history, and you and I both love history, and you do too. Good. If you look in the U.S. Constitution, the Constitution gives the power to regulate the I think they use the term coinage, but basically the money supply of the United States. To the Congress, because they know that was a power, the ability to mint coins and control the money supply was a power that was abused by kings from time immemorial. And the framers wanted to put it in the hands of the Congress to prevent it that power being abused. Well, it's a very technical issue, and so you can't really expect congressmen to do a good job regulating the money supply. So they have delegated that responsibility to the Federal Reserve, and that aspect of the Federal Reserve's and Federal Debt Reserve does a couple things, but that aspect of the Federal Reserve, which is control of the money supply, was the Congress did not want to give it to the president without putting constraints on it, and so they set up an independent Federal Reserve, and we know that the Federal Reserve around the world, we know that central banks around the world that have less independence have more inflation, and those that have more independence have less inflation.
Okay, we'll continue that in a moment. We have a caller. Good morning, caller. Welcome.
Thank you. My comment is about tariffs, obviously. The speaker presented it as if tariffs were a one-handed event. Trump's tariffs are reciprocal. So Switzerland had a $42 billion trade imbalance with the United States. So Swiss watches might cost 10% more, but now U.S. industry is selling more to Switzerland because Switzerland has been compelled to reduce their tariffs. Now, post-tariffs, inflation is 3% versus 9.1% March 2022. The producer price index is 2.7%. versus 11.23% March 2022. Oil is $64 a barrel versus $130 a barrel in 2022. It's not a one event. Trump unilaterally imposes tariffs on the world. If it's so bad, how come everybody else has tariffs against the United States?
Well, stay on the line, caller. Stay on the line. I want to give Chris a chance to respond, but I think you ought to stay on and discuss it with him.
Yeah, it's a very good point. One of the points that you said is using tariffs to tariffs in response to other tariffs, and that actually I agree with. That if you are dealing with someone on the other side who imposes tariffs on you, and you allow them to impose those tariffs, and the tariffs can also be the form of not just dollar tariffs, but also what we call quotas, which are restrictions on the number, the volume of imports, and things like that. And if you let others impose tariffs and quotas on us without retaliating, they can use those to manipulate them to their own advantage. But I'm talking about a general increase in tariffs and on the average tariff being charged in the world. That is a bad thing. The lower that is, the better off we are. So you have a valid point of what you're saying. Now, as to Switzerland itself, I have to say I don't have the numbers in my head of what the average tariff that was charged by Switzerland against the United States. But it was, by historical standards, it was very low. I don't think it was above 5% on average. I could be, again, I don't actually have that number in my head, but I think if it was above 5%, I'd be aware of it. And I know that generally the EU was charging tariffs of around 3% on the U.S., and the U.S. is charging tariffs around 2.3% on the EU. Now, I know Switzerland's not part of the EU, but the tariffs were very low by internet, by historical standards around the world prior to Trump coming into office.
Let me ask you, caller, let me ask you, we're also seeing tariffs get imposed because somebody thinks that a country's been involved in the drug trade or what have you. Do you approve of that?
Maybe that's beyond my pay grade. My point is this, is that it wasn't a one-off event in which Trump unilaterally imposed this upon the world. Was Trump supposed to write a letter saying, please remove your tariffs because it hurts us and not to our advantage, but much to your advantage?
Let me ask Chris.
Everything is one-sided. Trump did this. What did this to address a problem?
Were most of the tariffs responsive to tariffs in other countries or just to redress the trade balance? Without tariffs being a factor,
I think the former, that that Trump was responding to situations that were detrimental to American welfare.
Chris, but stay on the line.
Well, I I'm not going to say that the tariffs around the world were zero, and I'm not going to say that there were no restrictions on U.S. imports into other countries. It doesn't have to be just tariffs. It can also be restrictions on our imports, our exports there to them, their imports from us. It can be restrictions also that are functionally equivalent to a tariff. So I'm not saying that the playing field didn't have some of those in place. And you know, if you look at NAFTA, for example, it explicitly allows tariffs on certain industries and products. Both sides, Mexico has some on us, and we have some on Mexico. There's lots of international agreements that are considered free trade agreements that allow for certain exceptions for certain industries that are key industries. And you are right that imposing tariffs will bring manufacturing back to the United States, but at the cost of higher costs to consumers. Now, you did mention inflation, and I will say that tariffs generally contribute to inflation because they raise costs, they raise prices. However, the inflation that we've had has been primarily driven by monetary policy, not by tariffs, and the decline in inflation has been primarily driven by monetary policy and not by tariffs. Both directions. Inflation wasn't caused by tariffs, and the ending of inflation was not prevented by tariffs.
Okay, here's my last bullet. Last month, the ISM Manufacturing Index rose 10%. To 52.4%, which is the highest it's been for many, many years, and above 50% indicates an expanding economy. So I'll just leave it there and let you address that point. And I hope you're having a nice day.
Yeah, well, thank you for calling.
We hope you're having a good day too, caller. Thank you.
Appreciate the call. I love engaging with people who are passionate about economics, and there's a kernel. Like I said, there's a kernel of truth. If a country like China is famous for restricting U.S. imports, and they do it not through tariffs but through Chinese government policy.
Well, China also is so different because the government is involved in so many of what we would call private industry.
Exactly,
but. And we can talk further about that in a moment, but what would be the ISM or whatever it is that he just cited?
Yeah,
I believe the
reading of over 50% is a measure of not of the economy as a whole, but of manufacturing activity. Mm-hmm. I'm digging back the back of my head to remember that particular index. And it is an index that is widely followed and an indicator of the strength of manufacturing. It I think the biggest thing to look at is whether or not employment in manufacturing is expanding, because that is Donald Trump's stated goal. Mm-hmm. That's what mm-hmm. people are interested in finding out. And again, I'm not saying the tariffs can't do that. I think they can, and I would be mm-hmm. shocked if they didn't work to some extent that way. But it'd be much more effective if we targeted the particular industries right. that we're interested in supporting, rather than doing these broad-based across the board tariffs. And also
be more effective if we targeted the criminal illegal elements and not just anybody who happens to look like he might be.
Right. I think that's also true too. And I think it's tariffs are a very blunt instrument. Also, if you're mm-hmm. talking about certain, mm-hmm. If you apply them to everything instead of in targeted way.
Let me ask you this, inspired by the caller. What, if anything, what has Trump done that has been good for the American economy? You know, particularly average people.
Well, I think that Donald Trump is someone who has a lot of he's very good at identifying the problem. The problem is that we have allowed ourselves to be deindustrialized, and that has destroyed a lot of jobs that were available mm-hmm. to people who didn't have a college degree or didn't want to get a college degree. And he's identified a lot of problems in the country. We have a economy that is I'm sort of a libertarian type, and I think that we have an overly regulated economy. I believe in environmental regulation. I believe in land use zoning and mm-hmm. protecting mm-hmm. residential areas and things like that. But we've gone too far, you know. And I know I'm going to touch a button with you. Project Jupiter is a perfect example of this. This is good for our economy, but there's a lot of people who don't like it and who are afraid of it, but it will create jobs, good paying jobs many of them will be entry level jobs. They'll be available to people who in a part of our county that's very poor, and these will be entry level jobs that many of these people will be able to move into, and but yet people are blocking because they.
What about the history that most data centers have not first of all, they have not involved a lot of positions,
yeah.
beyond construction, and secondly, they're not like if you put a bowling alley or an Albertsons or whatever in a shopping center, well, draw things. Nobody's going to come be neighbors.
Well, I agree that you don't want to live next to a data center. That's why I have zoning laws. That's kind of my point. You don't want to live next to, but you live 10 miles away, and where those 10 miles away, that's where the bowling alleys will go. The announcement right now last week was that Project Jupiter will create 1,500 permanent jobs. That's not 10,000 permanent jobs an automobile manufacturing plant would create. But it's 1,500 jobs we don't have.
Yeah, but also
okay.
Oracle.
Wait a minute. Can we bet $100 on whether 5 years from now there'll be 1,500 additional jobs at Jupiter?
If you give me an over under, I'll take
1,500.
That's
what they. You're telling me this announcement like it came from Moses.
Well, no, I know that what you're saying, but of course their original promise was 750. I'm confident they're going to do more than 750 based on the recent announcements. Right. I'll say that, but I'm willing to bet the $100.
Yeah, well, go to that fancy restaurant that the Jupiter people took commissioners to.
All right, that sounds good. But I knew I was gonna push a button with this. But yeah.
I was just gonna say because I also obviously very fervently oppose the project, and the
more
community is not 10 miles away. In fact, it's 6 miles away, and it continues to expand further and closer to the project. And what about all of the workers that every day travel to the Santa Teresa Industrial Complex, who are just miles away from, that will be miles away from these data centers. They're going to be impacted, right? Negatively impacted by this, by the noise, you know, well, by the traffic, you know, all the negative things that come from data centers.
Yeah, well, you have an industrial complex, and of course the people work along the border in Santa Teresa, mm-hmm. That is an industrial area. There's lots of industrial noise there now, and I don't think that this will materially affect their ambient quality in that area. I do not know. I'm not going to sit here and say I'm an expert. I have been told by people who live near data centers that they're not very pleasant to live within a mile of.
Right.
But a mile is not 6 miles. It's not 2 miles. It's a mile. And, of course, the traffic and the things like that are going to be relatively modest because, by your very point, that given the size of the investment, it's relatively few employees. And I don't want to sit here and say that it's nirvana to have this investment. I'm just saying, show me another investment that can achieve the same kind of economic development that is likely to happen in that area in the next 10 years that's not a data center. Because that's the only kind of investment but much of the investment going on right now is this kind of investment around the country.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I wish we were just more creative. I think economists, that's part of the job that we're asking, right, to think outside the box. But, you know, arrived at data centers and sort of like, well, you know, and refused to see something else. And that's all the point that I make. Go ahead, Peter.
My question is, you're talking, well, go ahead and respond to it.
Well, so I've spent 40 years thinking about economic development in our community, and I've seen economic development opportunities. This is the largest one by far, but I've seen economic development opportunities come to our community and be chased away by this kind of not in my backyard attitude
right.
that a lot of people have.
Okay. But
and that's what I'm saying, that's an example of what the kind of deregulation that Donald Trump is arguing for that I think would be in the best interest of the country.
Well, this one, basically... The people who think about things like this decided that New Mexico should decrease its use of gas, go down to zero by 2040 something, right?
Mm-hmm.
And basically, if the state does that, this one installation apparently will, if they don't go to a lot of solar, which... they're not required to, they might, well, I hope they will, but if they don't, it'll basically muck up our atmosphere as much as we are doing now, completely negating that energy transition.
That is the big argument against it. I will grant you that is the big argument against it. So of course now I'm value judgment, right? I'm making a value judgment. I say obviously there are costs that come with economic development. This one has a lot. It doesn't have a big water impact. It doesn't have a big noise impact. Not zero on either, but not a big one. But it does have a big impact on greenhouse gas production.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see the argument that people say on the other side that makes it a no-go.
Well, when your grandchildren are climbing the wire fences to try to get into Canada because of climate craziness, they'll think fondly of you, I'm sure.
Well, listen,
we love you.
Our guest has been Chris
Erickson. We have more time.
I love coming here and debating with you guys.
I'll be back soon because we didn't even get to the AI issue.
Yeah, that's
we got more to say about Jupiter, I suspect.